Everyone. Especially want to welcome our visitors, returning guests, and our members. And for your first timers, please understand I am not Pastor Jake. This is not Pastor Jake. Don't hold it against him. Please come back. And he will be back next week. He's at conference this week. When he heard our lay member was at conference, and Jane, my wife, and I had the opportunity to go also. It's an unbelievable experience, and we want to encourage anyone who can to go to the conference. As I said, today is also Trinity Sunday. And if you think about it, Trinity Sunday is one of the very few Christian celebrations where we're commemorating a reality and a doctrine rather than a person or an event. It's very different. Trinity Sunday also honors the eternal God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And Trinity Sunday is only celebrated on one Sunday a year. It's different than, for example, the Advent or Lent. So it's a very special day. The Trinity obviously is a very fascinating, can be a very controversial teaching. The church sometimes describes it as a mystery, but not as a mystery as a riddle or a dinner theater mystery, but rather it's a reality above our human comprehension that we only begin to grasp, but ultimately we know it through our worship, our symbol, and our faith. I have a copy of a picture of a statue depicting the Trinity, and it's several copies of it over in the coffee room, and it's of a statue in a local church, and I encourage you to look at it. Becky, thank you.
Good morning and welcome. The scripture lesson today will be from Genesis 1 to 24. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning one day. And God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the firmament and separated the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and there was evening and there was morning a second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind, upon the earth." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning a third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser night to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning a fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the firmaments of the heaven. So God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening, and there was morning a fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and it was so.
I think we need to give Becky a round of applause for hanging in there with the entire Genesis story. That's fantastic. Also want to thank everyone who's made this service possible, especially Harold and the choir. Harold mentioned to me we're few in numbers today. You could not tell that from the beauty of their sound. It was fantastic. Thank you. I'd like to start out by reading a poem that ties into Genesis, and it's called A Mess. In the beginning, there was God and a mess, and it was a real mess. You couldn't see anything. Things could bump into you, and you would bump into them all the time. There were icky things, gooey things, soft things, hard things, sharp, prickly things, ouch. Everything was bumping into everything all the time because you couldn't see anything, because there wasn't any light, just the mess. And of course, God. And people sometimes call a mess chaos. I like to call it just a mess. Then God did something about the mess. God started to talk, started talking. God said, turn on light, and light turned on. And when light turned on, you could tell light from dark, and you could start to make out the colors. So you could see the mess for all it was, everything all jumbled up, a mess. There was water, rocks, clouds, sand, fire, glass, all jumbled up. You could see the mess, and of course you could see God. So God kept talking, he kept talking. The more God talked, the more unjumbled things became. Clouds rose, water fell, and gathered into streams and lakes, sand. Smaller rocks dotted the shores, while bigger rocks became land and hills and mountains, and maybe even West Virginia. And fire moved under the rocks. And God kept talking, and the unjumbled jumble began to dance with all kinds of life. Life in the waters, life on land, life in the hills and mountains, life in the ground, and life above in the skies. Everything was dancing, all kinds of life. There were green life covering the land, swimming life in waters, bobbing life, hopping life, wiggly life, standing life, flying life, walking life, running life watching life, everywhere life. But God kept talking. And there was one more kind of life that started dancing. And when this kind came, our kind of life, we did more than dance. We started talking too, kind of like God was talking, getting the jumble out of the mess and making room for life to dance. And when God saw this, he said, I like this kind of life. Start talking kind of like God, we did. So God said, this is very good. This beginning of this poem reminds me of when I'm home alone with my twin grandsons, and they decide to get the silly putty out and the watercolors and the water finger paints out, disaster. But always we try to make something out of that chaos. When I started thinking about Becky's reading today about turning on the light in the middle of chaos, it reminded me, this was before the world was created, it reminded me of a movie. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie Heaven Can Wait. Has anybody seen that movie? One person? Steve, you could drop this. We could just show the movie for the next hour. We'd be over. All set. Heaven Can Wait is a very interesting movie. It stars Warren Beatty, And Warren Beatty, and it was also released in 78, so that's why no one's probably seen it but me. I've seen it a couple times. Anyway, Warren Beatty plays a character named Joe Pendleton. And Joe's a quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams professional football team. But Joe's been injured for a while, and he's had a long recovery. But this one day, he gets this big surprise. He's been named the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams in their very first season opener. He's so excited about this, he decides to jump on his bicycle, and his path takes him along a mountain road. It's just beautiful. Everything's beautiful. Everything's fine. The wind's in his face. He's enjoying the whole thing. So he starts to head into a tunnel. The scene then cuts to the other side of the tunnel, and it's a one-lane tunnel. One way out, one way in, one way. A tractor trailer is coming in the other side of the tunnel, and a sports car is passing the tractor trailer. Joe enters the tunnel at one end, and the two vehicles are side by side coming from the other end. The viewers of this movie hear a terrible crash, an unbelievable crash, and the scene goes totally black, and there's silence. Silence seems like forever. After moments of this total silence and darkness, a tiny light appears, a very tiny light. And we also hear the sounds of a saxophone in the background. And it takes you to the next scene, and the movie continues. And I don't want to give it away, but Joe basically, his body is taken over by another individual, and Joe moves on in life. And from this chaos, there's some creation. But it reminded me of Genesis, hence from chaos also to community. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was void and dark, covered with deep things. And wind from God swept over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. So the poem I mentioned there, describing the jumbled chaotic mess of pre-creation, lets God speak in life, light and order and hope come forth. So it's a metaphor for the story. As everyone knows, life can be very difficult. It is very difficult. And sometimes it becomes a jumbled, chaotic mess, just a mess. Every human faces times like this in their life. You seem to be coming apart at the seams. Sometimes it's losing your job, becoming ill, having an accident, a disease in your body, God forbid a child disappears, a tornado hits, a war breaks out, someone becomes a victim of violence. Now sometimes this chaos we can predict through our life cycle. We start out as babies and obviously grow and have to depend on everyone for everything, and then grow up to a certain point and become teenagers, start to speak the urgent message that beckons for independence. And we want to break away from our parents. We want to not rely on them. We want to make our own way in life. Until one day, we start making decisions. And hopefully, one of those decisions will be choosing to be confirmed in our faith. Our families will celebrate that newfound adulthood. We continue on, get our driver's license, graduate from school, leave the nest, and go out on our own. Sometimes we share life with another person. We start building our own networks and our support systems. We choose our friends, those who we affiliate with, and many we find a community in which to practice faith. Every one of these life transitions, though, requires us to renegotiate our relationships and our place in the world. The changes we face as we grow and develop and transition through life in the periods of jumbled, chaotic mess, and hopefully come out on the other side. We're very fortunate if we emerge in the next stage unscathed. Just like those before us, however, the people of faith, they face those same transitions, the same struggles, the same jumbled mess, and a lot of that is recorded in our sacred text. Sometimes God's words will bring comfort. God brings order to chaos. Other times, God speaks to us and he demands things that make us uncomfortable and that can raise very difficult questions and our faith in our ministry, questions which do not have easy answers. But the presence of God is a constant in our lives, and it's through both the good times and the bad times. God is always there. As I mentioned, this is Trinity Sunday, and one definition of Trinity is that God is, in God's fundamental essence, a community of persons. God's very identity is communal, and the church is living out God's mission in the world, and it does so in God's image, as a community of persons, the Trinity. The community of faith promises to love people from womb to tomb and all the points in between, including all the pesky, annoying transitions that I talked about. And the vows we make at our baptism, we commit to nurture one another in Christ's holy church, and by teaching and by example, to give each other toward accepting God's grace, professing faith, and leading Christian lives. Sometimes this work is obviously a big challenge for us. It's hard. We as flawed humans try to live in the image of God and identify the community of a loving, independent people. Sometimes God blesses us with identities or calls us to actions that make other people of faith difficult to understand. Sometimes these transitions as individuals through this life cycle are not easy, and we look at them as unwilling. Sometimes they come as a result of violence, problems, cultural practices, or natural disasters. So the tough questions are really this: how does our church support individuals at these points of transition? How do transitions break relationships? How do those things get reformed? And what gets lost along the way? And what's gained? The good news is God in three persons is with us, speaking life, light, hope, and he goes through the murky, jumbled, chaotic world and helps us come out on the other side. But God knows it is hard work. Sometimes the harder the situation, the more we benefit from it. Just as those who've gone for us, they had the light of God shining brightly on their path. God lights our path. We may listen for God's voice speaking creation into being and forming community out of chaos, and out of the unjumble jumble begin to dance even as we sing, it is well with my soul. Sometimes most of the chaos I was talking about are a result of the thousands of agreements that you make with yourself. I'm not talking about legal agreements that someone like Larry would draft for you. I'm talking about agreements you make with your dreams, with society, with your parents, with spouse, with your children. But most importantly, the agreements that you make with yourself. When you make these agreements, you are basically forming your personality with yourself. This is what I am. This is what I believe. I can do this thing. I can't do this thing. This is reality. This is fantasy. This is possible. This is impossible. Now, one single agreement with yourself wouldn't be such a problem. But we have many agreements. Some make us suffer. Some make us fail. If you want to live a life of joy and fulfillment, you have to find courage to break those agreements that are fear-bound, fear-based, and claim your own personal power. The agreements that come from fear require us to expend too much energy, wasted energy. But the agreements that come from love help us conserve our energy and even gain more energy. If we can see it is our agreements that rule our own life, and we don't like what those dream of our life is turning out to be, we need to change the agreements. When we're finally to change our agreements, there are very four powerful agreements that will help us to break the agreements that come from fear and that deplete our energy. Each time you break an agreement, all power you use to create it returns to you. If you adopt these four agreements, They will create enough personal power for you to change your entire system and get rid of the old agreements. It's a very strong, you need a very strong will in order to adopt the four agreements. But you can be a light and enjoy life, begin life, and transform your life, and it may be amazing. The first agreement is to be impeccable with your word. It's the most important agreement. It's obviously the most difficult to honor. It's so important that just with this one agreement, you're most likely to be able to transcend your level of existence to a situation where you have heaven on earth. Impeccable with your word, it sounds very simple, but it's very, very powerful. Why your word? Your word is the power that you have to create. Your word is the gift that comes directly from God. The Gospel of John in the Bible, speaking of the creation of the universe, says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word is God." Through the Word, you express your creative power. It is though the word that you manifest everything, regardless of what language you speak. Your intent manifests through your word. What you dream, what you feel, what you really are, is manifested through your word. The word is not just a sound or written symbol. The word is force. It's the power you have to express and to communicate, to think, and thereby to create the events in your life. You can speak. What other animal on the earth or on this planet can speak? The word is the most powerful tool we have as humans. It is a tool of magic. But like a sword with two edges, your word can create the most beautiful dreams, or your word can destroy everything around you. One edge is the misuse of the word, which creates a living hell. The other edge is the impeccability of the word, which will only create beauty, love, and heaven on earth. Depending on how you use it, the word can set you free. It can even enslave you more than you know. Your word is pure magic, and misuse of the word is black magic. Now let us see what the word impeccability really means. Impeccable comes from the Latin peccatus, which means sin. The I am him, and impeccable means without. So impeccable means without sin. Now religious talk about sin in everything that you do. However, this connotation of sin is anything which you do against yourself. Everything you feel or believe or say that goes against yourself is sin. You go against yourself when you judge or blame yourself for anything. Being without sin is exactly the opposite. Being impeccable is not going against yourself. When you are impeccable, you take responsibility for your actions, but you don't judge or blame yourself. Now, the second agreement sort of follows along. Actually, the next three do. The second one is don't take anything personally. Whatever happens around you, don't take it personally. If I see you on the street and say, "Hey, you're stupid," without knowing you, it's not about you, it's about me. If you take it personally, then perhaps you think you're stupid. And maybe you think, how did he know I'm stupid? Is he clairvoyant, or can anybody see how I'm stupid? If you take it personally, you agree with whatever was said. As soon as you agree, the poison goes through you and you are trapped in a dream of hell. What causes this trap is what we call personal importance. Personal importance, or taking things personally, is the maximum expression of selfishness, because we make the assumption that everything is about me. During the period of our education, our domestication, we learn to take things personally. We think we're responsible for everything. Me, 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 always me. Nothing other people do is because of you. It's because of themselves. All people live in their own dream, in their own mind. They're a completely different world from the one we live in. When we take something personally, we make the assumption that they know what is in our world, and we try to impose our world on their world. Not a good situation. Even when a situation seems so personal, Even if others insult you directly, it has nothing to do with you. What they say, what they do, the opinions they give according to the agreements they've made in their own minds. Their point of view comes from all the programming they've received during domestication. When you take things personally, you feel offended, and your reaction is to defend your beliefs and create conflicts. You make something big out of something very little because you need to have the right to show that everybody else is wrong. You also try hard to be right by giving them your own opinions. In the same way, whatever you feel and do is just a projection of your personal dream, a reflection of your own agreements. What you say, what you do, your opinions are according to the agreements you've made, and these opinions have nothing to do with me. Now the third agreement, and there are only two more, the third agreement is don't make assumptions. We have a tendency to make assumptions about everything. The problem with assumptions is we believe that they're true. We could swear they're real. We make assumptions about what others are doing or thinking. We take it personally. We then blame them and react by sending emotional poison with our word. That is why whenever we make assumptions, we're asking for problems. We make an assumption, we understand, we take it personally, and we end up creating a whole big drama and mess for nothing. All the sadness and drama you've lived in your life most likely, and a lot of times, was rooted in making assumptions and taking things personally. Take a moment to consider the truth of this statement. The whole war of control between humans is about making assumptions and taking things personally. Our whole dream of hell is really based on that. Isn't it better to ask questions than to make an assumption? Because assumptions set us up for suffering. The big thing in our human mind is it creates a lot of chaos, which causes us to interpret everything. We can only see what we see, we hear what we hear, we don't perceive things the way they are. We have the habit of dreaming with no bias in reality. We literally dream things up in our imaginations because we don't understand something. We make an assumption about a meaning, and when the truth comes out, the bubble of our dream pops, and we found out it was not what we thought it was at all. In any kind of relationship, we can make an assumption that others know what we think. We don't have to say what we want. They're going to do what we want because they know us so well. If they don't do what we want, what we assume they should do, we feel hurt and we think, how could they do that? You should know. Again, we make the assumption that other people know what we want. A whole drama is created because we make this assumption and then put more assumptions on top of it. It's very interesting on how the human mind works. We have the need to justify everything, to explain and to understand everything. And we do this in order to feel safe. We have millions of questions that need answered because there are so many things that a reasoning mind cannot explain. And maybe the Trinity is one of them. It is not important if the answer is correct, it's just the answer makes us feel safe. This is why we make assumptions. Now, the fourth agreement is to always do your best. And this one allows the other three agreements to become ingrained in our habits. Always do your best under any circumstance, no more and no less. But keep in mind, your best is never going to be the same from one moment to the next. Everything is alive and changing all the time. So your best will sometimes be quality, and other times it will not be as good. For example, I preach better at the first service because I'm hungry now and I can't preach as well. When you wake up refreshed and energized in the morning, your best will be better than when you were tired at night. Your best can be different for you at different times and different people. Obviously, usually your best is going to be there when you're healthier versus sick. And when you depend on a wonderful feeling, you're happy versus being upset or angry or jealous. Our everyday moods, your best can change from one moment to another, from one hour to the next, from one day to the next day. Your best changes over time. As you build the habit of the four new agreements, your best will become better than it used to be. Regardless of quality, doing your best, no more, no less, is the thing to do. If you try too hard, do more than your best, you will spend more energy than is needed. In the end, your best will not be enough. When you overdo something, you deplete your body, you go against yourself, and it will take you longer to accomplish your goal. But if you do less than your best, you subject yourself to frustrations, self-judgments, guilt, and regrets. Just do your best in any circumstance in life. It doesn't matter if you're sick or tired. If you always do your best, there's no way you can judge yourself. If you don't judge yourself, there's no way you're going to suffer from guilt, blame, and self-punishment. By always doing your best, you will break a big spell that you've been under. Doing your best, you're going to live life intensely. You're going to be productive. You're going to do good for yourself because you're giving yourself to your family, to your community, to everything. But it is action that's going to make you feel intensely happy. Action. When you always do your best, you take action. Doing your best is taking the action because you love it, not because you're expecting an award. As one minister at our conference, when you may remember, he said, just bring us all you got. Just bring us all you got, no matter what you're doing. So I ask you today to go forth, to take action, and yes, to create disciples in Christ. Thank you.